This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. And we are joined by David Elliott of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. David, thank you for being with us again.
Thank you for having me on, Mike.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us, especially on such short notice, and also because I know that you have been very, very busy as a result of the Supreme Court decision which took place in Vermont yesterday. Can we talk a little bit about what happened and what led to this, what I would have to say is a landmark decision?
Yes, it was a landmark decision, Mike. What happened was this case actually began in 1997, after three couples filed suit against the state of Vermont when they were denied a marriage license. These were three same-sex couples. The case wended its way through the legal system, and yesterday, in what was really truly a groundbreaking decision, the Vermont Supreme Court ruled that the state of Vermont must provide the benefits of marriage to same-sex couples just as they would to married opposite-sex couples. Now, what happens next is the court kicked the issue back to the legislature, and the legislature will have the option of developing a kind of dual domestic partner system or going ahead and revising the state's marriage laws so that there's no difference at all between same-sex couples and married couples.
What would be the, well, I mean, I'm trying to figure out quite how they would go about creating some sort of dual type of system, though certainly I would be imagining that there would be a lot of people pressuring for that.
Right. Basically, it would be a system that would guarantee same-sex couples all of the rights of marriage except marriage itself. Now, a lot of politicians and some conservatives are going to be pushing for that alternative. We, of course, will be pushing for full marriage because the separate but equal is inherently unequal. As the Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, you can set up the dual system, but unless you're granting the exact same thing, i.e. marriage, it's still discriminatory.
We're talking with David Elliott of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse, and you are tuned to community-supported radio, KVMR-FM. David, can we let people know about the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and that organization so they have an idea of all the things that you're involved with there?
Sure. We are the nation's oldest gay and lesbian organization. We fight for the rights of gay people, lesbian people, bisexual people, and transgendered people. We've been around since 1973, so we're in our 26th year now. We're based in Washington, D.C., but we actually have 35,000 members around the country. We work on a whole variety of issues. We work on domestic partner benefits. We work on same-sex marriage issues. We work on non-discrimination ordinances, passing those. We work on passing hate crimes laws. We work on the fair treatment of gay, lesbian, bisexual students in the classroom. If you can think of a GLBT issue, as we like to say, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered, then it's probably something we're working on.
It seems to me, I know I was hearing a lot about the whole issue of quote-unquote, if we want to call it gay marriage or same-sex marriage, that was happening in Hawaii that seemed to be moving forward, but then yet it all of a sudden, or maybe just from my perspective, all of a sudden got scuttled, and then we have this landmark decision out of Vermont happening. I mean, can you give us a little background on how all of that came to take place?
Well, sure. In fact, Hawaii really got things going. Several years ago, the Hawaii Supreme Court ruled that the state has no compelling interest in denying same-sex couples the right to marry. When that happened, religious conservatives organized, and Congress passed something called the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA for short, that allows states... Well, first of all, it establishes marriage on a federal level as being between a man and a woman, and it allows states to prevent the recognition of marriages that are conducted in other states. A bunch of states followed suit and passed their own version of DOMA-type laws, in fact, 30 in all. although California is not included in that bag. After that, the Vermont case was filed. There were several referendums, statewide referendums on the issue, one in Alaska, one in Hawaii, just last November. And voters in Hawaii voted to allow the state legislature there to amend its constitution to redefine marriage. And when that happened, the Supreme Court came back and said, well, you know, our earlier ruling still stands, but the vote that took place in November 1998 renders the issue moot. It was a very complicated ruling, and it was a setback for us. And so that's why yesterday's ruling was just so breakthrough and so monumental and is going to have a lot of political and cultural ramifications throughout the United States.
Talk, if you will, about what some of those political and cultural ramifications might be.
Well, for instance, just yesterday, after learning of the ruling, we also found out that a state legislator in the state of Rhode Island has filed legislation that would recognize, that would have the state of Rhode Island recognize same-sex marriages. So we're going to see a checkerboard quality throughout the United States where there will be some legislatures that will seek to limit same-sex marriage to limit marriage to opposite-sex couples only, and other legislatures will debate opening up marriage to everybody, as it should be. So it's going to be a fight that's going to be with us for some time to come. We can expect some additional ballot initiatives. You know that the Knight Initiative is already on the March 7th California ballot. More importantly, I think, than this political struggle is the fact that Americans are going to be talking about this. They're going to be talking about it in their churches and in the classrooms and around the dinner table. People are going to become more comfortable with the topic of same-sex marriage and why same-sex marriage is a central equation to gay and lesbian equality.
When you're talking about the Knight Initiative, are we talking what also is being referred to as Proposition 22 out here?
That is correct. I believe the official name of it now is the, if I'm not mistaken, the Limits on Marriage Initiative.
And in essence, what I'm going to refer to as Proposition 22 is designed to, in essence, say that same-sex marriage cannot take place in California.
More precisely, the proposition would forbid the state of California from recognizing any same-sex marriage that takes place in another state.
Okay.
So let's pretend, for the sake of hypothesis, that the Vermont legislature comes through and allows for same-sex marriage. Under the status quo, theoretically, a gay couple goes to Vermont, gets married, then if they move to California, California would be required under the Full Faith and Credit Act to recognize that marriage. But if Proposition 22 passes, that would block that, and people who obtain these civil rights in Vermont would have their civil rights not applying to them in California.
We're talking with David Elliott, Communications Director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. David, are you ready to take a phone call?
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
I would appreciate it if you would let me make three quick, short points for David.
As long as you make them quick and short.
And I'll take my answer off the air.
Go ahead.
Okay. Point one, this is just the Vermont Supreme Court. It has yet to go, undoubtedly, to the United States Supreme Court. Point two, quick, is that every English dictionary that I have seen defines marriage as official sanctioned bond between two people of different sexes, male and female. Now, last point is this strange situation that God has said that homosexuality is an abomination to the Lord thy God, and we have this real-life situation that at least for the last 25 years, the greatest smartest scientists in the world have spent billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to find a cure or even an alleviation or an inoculation and not been successful.
And your point is? And your point is?
The point is that scientists have discovered cures, inoculations for every major disease in the world except AIDS.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm not quite sure what that really has to do with much of anything, but...
Well, let me take those in reverse order,
please,
if I may.
Please do.
First, on the whole, the abomination/AIDS argument. AIDS, of course, is a terrible pandemic that is affecting millions and millions of people around the world, the overwhelming majority of whom... are heterosexual. If you look at some of the infection rates in sub-Saharan Africa, for instance, you see that this is a terrible, ravaging disease that is just affecting everybody, and it's a tragedy. It doesn't really have to do with the gay and lesbian civil rights movement in the United States. Now, the caller's second point was the definition of marriage. According to every English dictionary, I don't actually have an English dictionary in front of me, but we know that society is evolving. We know that our concepts of equality have evolved through the generations, through the centuries. The Bible used to recognize slavery as an acceptable practice. Now there's nobody, certainly within our country, who would agree with that. On to the caller's first point about the Vermont Supreme Court decision, it's important to point out that since this was a state constitutional statute at issue, the Vermont decision cannot be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Judicially, this case is over.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're talking with David Elliott of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. David, let me ask you, because, you know, the issue of the Supreme Court was raised, it would seem to me that on the face of it, the whole issue of who can marry is always sort of taken back to, well, it says in the Bible, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And since we have a premise in this country that, as I understand it, to be the separation of church and state, it would seem to me that it would be to the advantage of gay and lesbian people to have this case go in front of the Supreme Court, because the law is, as I can see it, based in an issue of a particular religion, which really shouldn't be used to be basing our social and secular laws. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're getting at, Mike. Let me make a couple of points here. First, it's a common misconception that religious people in this country dislike gays and lesbians. Actually, if you look at all the polling data, most people of faith in the United States embrace and support the basic dignity and humanity of all people, regardless of sexual orientation. We have allowed, through the past generation, a small group of religious, very right-wing conservative religious folks called the religious right, political movement, we have allowed them to define Christianity for all of us. And it doesn't fly. If you look at exit polling data, for instance, only about 2 to 3% of voters in the United States identify themselves as part of the religious right. Now, on to the U.S. Supreme Court argument. Eventually, a marriage case is headed for the U.S. Supreme Court, but the way that that's going to happen is when both the Federal Defense of Marriage Act and the Full Faith and Credit Clause of the U.S. Constitution are tested. That's going to happen when one state legalizes marriage, then a couple who's married in that one state travels to another state and demands their constitutional rights be upheld by having their marriage recognized in that state. At that point in time, you've got a case that can be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court after it works its way through the federal appellate process. Right now, however, we don't have a case that can be appealed.
Well, certainly that makes sense. And I would assume that when those conditions arise, that there will certainly be a couple who will be ready to test those waters, I would think, in order to move this agenda forward.
If not tens of thousands.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly didn't think it would just actually be two people all by themselves. David, let me ask if we can switch gears a little bit, because I'd like to talk a little bit about the Creating Change convention that took place here in California, because we were going to have you on to talk about that, and unfortunately, because you were so busy and things happened, we didn't have you on. Can we talk about what happened out here in California, the Creating Change 99 event?
Sure. It was a really, really exciting conference. What happened was we had some 2,500 people, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered activists from throughout the United States, come to Oakland, California. It was our first trip to Northern California. We have this conference every year. It's always held in a different city. And we talked about activism. We talked about grassroots training and organizing. We talked about Proposition 22. We had some 150 workshops all in all. We discussed faith issues. We discussed religious issues. We discussed how to fight racism and sexism in our movement. It was a very, very interesting, diverse event. Some of our keynote speakers at the conference were Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who represents the Oakland area, and Oakland Mayor Jerry Brown, who officially welcomed us to town.
Yes, I was reading about it, and it seems that there certainly was a tremendous amount of very interesting panels and speakers and activities being held within the conference. And as you so stated, this is the first time you've been to Northern California. And I was wondering why it took y'all so long to get out here.
Well, you know, there's a funny story behind that. When Creating Change began 12 years or so ago, to some of us it seems like San Francisco was a natural place to go to. But we didn't want to perpetuate the stereotype that all gay and lesbian people live in San Francisco or all gay and lesbian people live in New York City. The fact of the matter is most gay and lesbian people live in small and medium-sized towns across the country. Gay and lesbian people are everywhere. So it didn't really seem time to go to San Francisco. Then within the past year, you know, we started asking ourselves, well, wait a minute. Should all of the, you know, hardworking activists in the Bay Area, in Oakland, in San Francisco, be punished because of our hesitancy to come to a place and, you know, or to not come to a place for fear of perpetuating a stereotype? So after all these years, and after having gone to cities all across the country, we've been to North Carolina, we've been to Detroit, Michigan, we've been to Dallas, Texas. We finally decided that it was time to come to a really culturally rich, politically active area such as Oakland.
We're talking with David Elliott of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. David, let me ask you, because one of the issues that has begun to be raised again, not that it's really ever gone away, is the whole issue of the military don't ask, don't tell policy. Can I get your thoughts on that?
Sure, and of course that's been a really, really hot issue lately. Simply put, don't ask, don't tell is dying. Support for it is crumbling. Even, and get this, even 57% of conservatives feel that gays and lesbians should be allowed to serve in the military without discrimination. Overall, 70% of Americans overall feel like there should be no discrimination, and then among liberals, 91% feel like there should be no discrimination. There have been a number of developments within just the past week around the Don't Ask, Don't Tell issue. You've had Vice President Al Gore, in a very strongly worded statement, call for elimination of the policy. You had Bill Bradley earlier in the presidential campaign also call for an elimination. You have a Republican state legislator in Arizona named Steve May, who is being investigated by the U.S. Army, and in fact the U.S. Army is moving forward with plans to discharge him after he said that he was gay during a floor debate that was going on in Arizona. You have other events, too. President Clinton came out strongly just this past weekend, or excuse me, it was actually the weekend before last, against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He said, quote, "The policy as implemented does not work as I announced and as the leaders of the military at that time in 1993 pledged to implement it," close quote. You've also had the very brutal murder of PFC Barry Winchell in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Just recently, the person charged with Winchell's murder was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. And that was unfortunately a direct result of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because Winchell's superior officer illegally questioned him about his sexual orientation, and then rumors about him started sweeping throughout the barracks. Meanwhile, discharges of gays and lesbians from the military because of their sexual orientation, ironically and tragically, have skyrocketed since 1993, the year the policy was implemented. They've gone up 86% at a time when the armed services, in particular the U.S. Army, are having a real problem recruiting people. So all of these different factors and recent events and statements by our political leaders point to a policy whose support is crumbling. So we're going to eventually be seeing Don't Ask, Don't Tell going away.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking about the fact that we are now looking at going into the last year of Clinton's administration, and thinking back when he came in, you know, in essence saying that he was really going to champion the issue of gay people in the military. And, you know, in my opinion, he crumbled. You know, looking back at what started at the beginning of the administration and what he's saying now, I mean, did Clinton, in essence, hang gay and lesbian people in the military out to dry in some way by saying he was going to do these things and then, you know, crumbling under the pressure?
That's a tough question, and let me explain why. There were many of us who wanted President Clinton to issue a executive order in 1993 banning discrimination in the military. There are many of us, myself included, who feel like that would have been the right and just thing to do. But the U.S. Pentagon, all of the generals, all of their military leaders, strongly opposed the move, and there was a real question about whether the American public was ready for it. And there was also a question about whether the executive order would have stood up in Congress. There's a chance that Republicans in Congress would have been able to round up the votes to override it. So back in early 1993, Clinton crafted this Don't Ask, Don't Tell compromise with the help of Colin Powell and some of the other Joint Chiefs of Staff. And it simply hasn't worked. So now when you look back, you can kind of conclude that an executive order would have been the right way to go in 1993, but there were some real valid and legitimate questions about whether it would have flown politically at that time.
Well, certainly it's always easy to look back and say somebody should have or could have or maybe it would have, but you know, somehow what I'm hearing you kind of say is it's easy to say, yes, this is the right thing to do. It's another thing to actually make that happen in the real political world.
Right. What's an executive order if it's going to be overturned by Congress? You're left with nothing. However, having said that, if it had been me and I had been sitting in that White House, I would have gone ahead and issued the executive order and then gone public and publicly challenged Congress to overturn civil rights. When you frame the issue to the American public as a civil rights issue, as an issue of basic fairness, you find that most of the time the American public is with you.
We've been speaking with David Elliott of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. David, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to get your final thoughts for our audience today.
Well, I'd like to encourage your audience to continue thinking about the issues that we've discussed. They can visit our website at www.ngltf.org. It's an important conversation that we're having. In our quest for equality, we only make achievements, we only win the battles we're fighting when we get to engage people in one-on-one conversations. So hopefully through our conversation today, Mike, some people's minds have been changed and hopefully some hearts have been opened.
Can you give the web URL one more time, please?
Yes, that's www.nglTF.org. NGLTF stands for National Gay Lesbian Task Force.
David Elliott, Communications Director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, thank you for being with us on the program, and hopefully we'll be able to have you on again in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, and I'd like to wish all of your listeners happy holidays.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by telephone, 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.